I would like to, assuming the technology cooperates, open with a short video. And if you watch television at all, you're going to recognize this as a very current commercial that is being played these days. Tony?
This could work.
We're taking you home now, sir.
Are you with search and rescue?
No, I'm with the resort.
How you doing?
Who knew? Who knew? A very apropos question for us today. So I want to tell you about a true story, and that is that several years ago, back when I was a member at Unity Northwest Church in Des Plaines, one day Susan and I and several other people received an email from a good friend and congregant at that church. And he was emailing us to talk about aluminum foil, plastic wrap, and wax paper. And what he was trying to say was because all of these things are packaged in a very similar manner. They're wrapped around a cardboard roll, and then they're placed in a long rectangular box. And the reason he was emailing us is because he had a discovery, and that is at either end of these boxes are little cardboard tabs that you're supposed to push in so that when you pull on whatever the contents are, the whole roll doesn't come out. It's held in place and comes out nice and smooth. And he concluded his email with this line that I will never forget. Geez, I'm really hoping that I'm not the only one who never realized this. Again, who knew? And I wanted to open with this video today because it kind of ties in. Here's somebody who really is convinced that he's stranded on an island someplace, and all of the time, just on the other side, there was a resort. So again, who knew? All of us at one time or another have these discoveries. Sometimes they're big, sometimes not so big. You know, we learn things that we didn't know about the world, about somebody else, and even about ourselves. And then we ask those kinds of questions or statements saying, geez, I never realized that. You know, nobody ever told me about this. I had no clue. Maybe Reverend Jan's phrase from last week, isn't that interesting? And again, who knew? And all of these things that we've been watching and listening to up to this point all tie together with our main focus today, because today we're going to look at the story of the paralytic at the pool of Bethesda. And Bethesda means pool of mercy. And there was such a place in Jerusalem that was surrounded by five porticos that represent the five senses. And at any given day, at any given time, in the pool area, there would be all kinds of people that were suffering from some sort of physical ailment. So there were people who would be blind, people who would be lame, and there would be people who would be paralyzed. Because the story behind it was that occasionally the waters of the pool would become stirred, and if you were the first one into the pool at that time, you would experience a healing, a cure for whatever it was that was bothering you. And there was one man in particular, a paralytic, who had been ill for 38 years. And one day, Jesus comes through the pool area, and he sees this man, and he stops, and he recognizes that he's been suffering with this for a long time. And so Jesus asks him a very simple question. Do you wish to be well? And the man really doesn't give him a straight answer. Instead, he comes forward with some excuses. I can't get to the water. Nobody will help me. Everybody always beats me to the pool. So Jesus just looks at him and says, stand up, pick up your mat, and walk. And the man does exactly that. Now, you have to have a little bit of context here. I mean, this is somebody who was a Jew that lived in this community and was suffering with this ailment for 38 years. And everybody would have known who this guy was. And so when he walks out, instead of being greeted by people, whatever the man's name might have been, Murray, Saul, or Charlie, nobody comes and says, hey, Charlie, my God, I can't believe this. You're actually walking. This is incredible. After so long, truly, this is a miracle. I'm so happy for you. Instead, what he got was, you know, this is the Sabbath, and you're carrying your mat, which is against the law. And then they wanted to know who was responsible for this. And when ultimately, when they find out that it was Jesus who inspired the whole thing, they come after him and say, they demand to know, by what right are you doing healing work on the Sabbath? And so Jesus just responds, my Father is still working, and I am still working. And they're incensed by this response, and they just wish they could get their hands on him and kill him. Because he, after all, was violating their precious set of rules. The story is listed among the many miracles that Jesus performed. But today, I have a question with regard to this one, and that is, where exactly is the miracle in this story? And so I would answer to you from my own take for most of my life, I would have said, well, that's an easy question. The miracle was when Jesus pronounced those words, get up and walk, and the man walked and was, you know, bada bing, bada boom, it was a done deal. But today I want to explore a slightly different take with regard to the whole thing. You see, I don't think that it was any magical or miraculous pronouncement on Jesus' part that caused this man to walk or made an ailment of 38 years to suddenly go away. If this were the case, think about it. There would be no need for the dialogue that took place in this story. You know, Jesus would not have had to ask that question, do you wish to be well? Because all that he would have had to do is come upon the scene, analyze the situation, and say, stand up and walk. Again, it's a done deal. There would have been absolutely no need for conversation. And please don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to minimize Jesus' role in this story. I'm just trying to understand it a little bit better. Because I actually think this miracle, this cure, is a two-part deal. And the first part consisted of verifying that this guy really wanted to be cured. And you might say, well, Mike, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. It had to have been a rhetorical question. Who would be paralyzed and not want to be cured? And so I tell you this morning, a lot of us do not wish to be cured. And if you look at this from a metaphysical standpoint, I would go so far as to say that each and every one of us, at some point in our lives, in some area or some areas in our life, really don't want to get unstuck and choose to remain paralyzed. Because anytime you limit yourself by virtue of your thoughts, by virtue of your thinking, you are choosing to be paralyzed. And any time that you allow somebody else to determine your reality, you are allowing yourself to be paralyzed. Any of you familiar with the motivational speaker Les Brown? I saw a couple of hands. If you're not, go onto YouTube, look him up and listen. Les Brown is one of the most highly regarded motivational speakers in the entire world. If you want to sign him on to come and speak to your group, you're talking at just the start of the negotiations well in excess of $25,000. But this man wasn't always a tremendous success. Back when he was a boy in middle school, he was diagnosed as being mentally retarded. And then several years later, when he was well into high school age, one of the high school teachers told him, go to the blackboard and write on the blackboard exactly what I'm going to tell you to write. And Les Brown said, I can't do that, sir. He says, what do you mean you can't do that? Why can't you do it? And he said, I'm not one of your students, sir. And he said, I don't care if you're one of my students. Go to the board and write on the board what I'm telling you to write. And he said, I'm sorry, sir, I can't do that. And he said, why not? He says, well, sir, I've been diagnosed that I am educable, mentally retarded. And the teacher got up from behind his desk. He got in Les Brown's face and said, I never want to hear you say that again. Never let anybody else's opinion of you define your reality. On that day, Les Brown's entire life changed. I think you could draw an analogy and said that up until that point, he had been severely stuck, severely paralyzed. But now, for the first time, he was able to walk. And it didn't happen because that teacher mumbled some sort of magical, miraculous words. What that teacher did was call him forth. What that teacher was a voice of recognition and awareness. We live in a world that is very controlling and very restricting. And you go back to that story and understand the ridiculousness of it, that after being paralyzed for 38 years, the reaction that the people would give to him is, hey, you're breaking our rules here. And the indignation that was vented towards Jesus for participating in helping to effect a cure. We live in a world that in many ways is trying to reel us in, determine for us who we are, what we're supposed to do, and how and when we're supposed to do it. This past week, I attended a funeral out of town. And the deceased was a Roman Catholic, and so I went to the Roman Catholic funeral mass, which actually, by the way, was very touching and very beautiful in so many ways. And then when it came time for communion, the priest got up and he made an announcement. And he said, if you are Catholic, you are invited to come forward and receive. If you're not a Catholic, you cannot receive. But if you come forward and fold your hands like this, what we will do is we will give you a blessing. And the third option, of course, was don't come up. And so I was sitting there, and I admit my first reaction was, okay, your church, you get to make the rules. And then I thought about this. You know, my way shower, Jesus, was the ultimate rule breaker. And he constantly hung out and rubbed elbows with all of the so-called unsavory characters that were around him. And I had this picture in my mind. What if I had a guest at my house? And when it became dinner time, I looked at the guest and said, hey, come and join us in the dining room. You could sit with us, but you can't eat because you're not a Corpin. And I felt that I was being controlled in this environment and that I was being denied this opportunity to give forth of an expression and a sending forth of love of the people that were around me and for the spirit of the deceased as well. So I went up and I received. None of the statues moved. Everything went smoothly and all was okay. It does seem silly, the notion that somebody who would be paralyzed would not want to be cured. I mean, Les Brown endured his situation, oh, I don't know, 5+ years, I'm guessing. And again in the story, the paralytic for 38 years. But at some point, you kind of get used to it. And at some point, you may even begin to take comfort in it. And I know that sounds crazy, but I believe that that is exactly what the mat in the story represents. Yeah, I'm afflicted, but I could lie down back on my mat, and everything is okay. The world goes on. How long do we remain stuck in our bad situations? In the story, it was 38 years, and the paralytic had his excuses ready. Lord, I can't get to the pool. Nobody will help me. Somebody always beats me into the water. And you know what? We have our own excuses as well. I'm under so much pressure. There's not enough hours in the day to do what I need to get done. I feel like I'm being asked to juggle 6 balls in the air at one time. My teacher, my boss hates me. I work my fingers to the bone. I break my buns every day at this job, and I can't seem to get ahead. Life is just so unfair. And so we settle in, and we recline on our mats, and in effect say, okay, I guess I'm going to accept what seems to be my fate. So are there alternatives? Let me tell you, there always, always, always are alternatives. And the reason that there are always alternatives is because that question of do you wish to be well is coming at us all of the time in so many different ways and shapes. You want to close-up example of what I'm talking about? Look at this community, our little family here of Unity of Fox Valley. Pay attention to how people want to foster and nurture and take care of one another. All that somebody has to do is get an inkling that somebody's in need of something, and they will go out of their way to be present to those people. And you might say, that's not a question, that's an affirmation. And I would say, no, that's the question asked and answered. We also have the opportunity to hear that question, listen to that question, anytime we go into the silence and listen to that still small voice, because whatever phraseology might come to you in meditation, it always inherently is containing that same question. Do you wish to be made well? And that brings us to the second part of this cure healing process, the response on the part of the paralytic to Jesus. And if you go and you read the scriptural text, you will not find him saying yes in response to the question. But what you will find is when Jesus says, stand up. After 38 years of paralysis, the man stands up. So that's not a whisper of a yes. That's a shout of a yes. It's a belief on his part that, you know what, maybe I can be better. Maybe I can have a better life. It's a shift that is actually a yes that represents a shift in consciousness, an ability on his part to see his own potentialities. And at the same time, it's a denial of power to anything that ever led to him becoming paralyzed to begin with and have kept him in that state for 38 years. And it's that awareness, it's that consciousness that I believe really and truly was the underpinning of the entire miracle in the story. In our own lives, if we don't have some similar realization, we are going to remain stuck in whatever area or areas might be involved. But if we can also have a similar transition in consciousness, you know, we can begin to see the endless possibilities that absolutely are waiting for each and every one of us. In an unlimited set of potentialities. Because the moment that we say yes to that question, and I'm not talking about the three stupid little letters, Y-E-S, but the moment that we say yes to that question with our entire being, with our heart, minds, and souls, with the very fiber of who we are, it all becomes different. And we make a transition from being a nowhere man or a nowhere woman that the lead in song was all about to an I am man or an I am woman. And it absolutely affects every area of our life. Our finances, our job, our relationships, absolutely everything. And you know what's kind of fascinating? If you go back and look at the story, that paralytic never makes it to the pool because he didn't need to. All he needed to do was respond yes in answer to that question. I do wish to be well. All of us have what I like to call our if only I can litany. If only I can get through this semester at school, it's going to be okay. If only I can make it through this really difficult time at work, everything's going to work out. If only I could hang on to this relationship, which is going absolutely nowhere, I'm sure things are going to be great. If only I can get a break. All of the bad stuff is going to go away. If only I could make it to the pool, life would be wonderful again. All of these if onlys are equivalent to the pool in the story. These are things that frustrate our hopes and our desires, and they slow down our growth and our awareness. They serve the purpose of distracting us, diverting our attention from who we are, what we're supposed to be, and what we're supposed to be doing. And all of these if onlys in the pool in the story pose as being the cure-all for whatever it is that is ailing us or bringing us pain and discomfort in our life. And both of these things suggest that if we want to know happiness and well-being in our life, we're going to have to find it from without instead of from within. 38 years is a long time. I'll share with you for myself, there came a point in my life where I realized I always wanted to be in the ministry. And never really could admit that to myself. And yet, after I had applied and been accepted at the Unity School of Christianity, I had lunch with a friend and I was having second doubts or cold feet. And I said to her, do you know how old I'm going to be when I finally graduate and get ordained? And she just kind of, I don't know, how old will you be if you don't go to school and become a minister? Good point. I open with this video clip today because I think it's analogous to a lot of our situations. This poor fellow spent a long time thinking that he was alone and stranded on an island when at any given time, any given moment, all he had to do was a little exploration. And he would realize that he had access to abundance, to a resort. And in the story of the Wizard of Oz, all Dorothy ever had to do the whole time was click her heels, and she could be on her way home. Regardless of how long you may have been impaired with regard to your money issues, relationship issues, job issues, or absolutely whatever, you do not have to remain there. 38 years is a long time, but 38 years isn't as long as forever. And 38 years isn't even as long as 38 years plus one day. The point is, it does not have to remain your ultimate destiny. That you have options here. You have choices here. You can choose to go home anytime that you want to. You could choose to be made whole absolutely anytime that you may want to. And just like the paralytic in the story, anytime you want to, you can begin to turn things around in any area of your life or your life on a whole at which you are really struggling and not having an easy time of it. And you might say to me, okay, yeah, I buy that, but it's going to take a miracle. And my response to you would be, you are that miracle. And so I close with a simple challenge today. I double dare you. Ask that question of yourself. Do you wish to be well? And then quietly, just answer it truthfully.